welcome to episode 116 of Taking the Charge podcast with you from Regensburg, Germany. I am David Hein of Hein News. Welcome to the show. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate every one of you stopping by and giving us a listen. This week, we're going to look at some FIBA Oceania hoops. There is a new coach for Team Germany. Also, the seedings have been handed down for the Eurobasket draw. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about one of the most exciting players in Europe right now, the 19-year-old Mario Hezonja. Before we get into that, I wanted to just do some of the housekeeping. You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Hein News, H-E-I-N-N-E-W-S. You can catch us in the Facebook group. Just put in Taking the Charge, and then we will open you up to the wonderful content there, the community that's grown in the Facebook group. And then you can also contact me at heinnews@gmx.de. You can also just go to heinnews.com, and there's a contact page in there as well. So various ways to get in contact. Actually, the first topic I wanted to address this week was actually something that ended up missing last week for the show, and that was the naming of a new national team coach for Germany. Obviously, being here located in Germany, we have talked a lot about German basketball. And I did want to come back to that because it is a pretty big story. Germany obviously is one of the co-hosts of the Eurobasket 2015. They have also thrown their they're also considering throwing their hat in the ring to host the 2019 World Cup. The DBB president Ingo Weiss said that they are considering that, but the new coach is no unfamiliar person for the for listeners of the show and followers of German basketball. It is Chris Fleming, the wildly successful coach at Borussia Baskets Bamberg, who won four German titles in a row, three of those being doubles, where they took the cup as well. Fleming obviously comes in knowing German basketball. Has been around Deutschland for probably close to two decades. First as a player at Artland in the lower leagues, then moved over as a coach, brought them up, and brought them pretty far. I think it was the top 16 of the Euro Cup, and then moved over to Bamberg. And, of course, his success is well known there. After getting the boot from Bamberg, he was rumored to be considered for the Olympiakos job that opened up, but as far as I know, didn't really want to take that one. The German job obviously will not allow him to be a club coach, so he will be focusing on the German national team. And yeah, there's actually a couple of different ways that this German team could go next summer at the Eurobasket 15. There's a lot of talk that Dirk Nowitzki will be coming back to the national team if he's healthy and if the Mavericks don't happen to go too far into the playoffs. Nowitzki has always said that, you know, if he does come, he would definitely at least ask Chris Kamen if he'd like to come back. Just saw in an interview that Kamen is actually Kamen and his wife are expecting a little baby, so don't know if he would be willing to step away from the new family to play Eurobasket. I don't know the case at all. Haven't really looked around for interviews if Kamen has thought anything about the national team, German national team, but obviously Nowitzki has been has basically committed to doing it if he's healthy. And that makes, you know, just it makes Fleming's job a little bit, you know, gives him obviously a super talent, but, you know, German teams in the past with Nowitzki, especially once the younger kids kind of started to come into the team, kind of were a little bit more watching Nowitzki rather than playing with him. And I think one of Fleming's main jobs is to come up with a system that is going to let going to bring his players into position, into a system, whereas they, you know, he can best utilize Nowitzki and hopefully get his guys to play along with him. The talent is definitely rising. There's a lot of, you know, it's an interesting group of German players. Obviously, Dennis Schroeder will be around. They also have Tibor Pleiss, who's a center, which if Kamen comes along, might be a little bit different. You know, Pleiss had a bad time at 2011 Eurobasket where he didn't play after a pretty good 9 and 10 development. He's been developing really, really well in Spain and, you know, is on the fringes of coming over to the NBA. You know, Tim Albrecht has played really well, but again, a center, you know, Johannes Voigtmann, of whom I'm a big fan, is playing really, really well right now. He's only 22. He'd be another option, but obviously also a center. Kleber, who's gone down to Spain and really been tremendous down there. Maxi Kleber, you know, he's a four. I suppose if they could play a little bit big and play him at a three. Then you have guys like Shafatic, Günther, Niels Giffey, Benzing, Steiger, Schwedhelm. Alex King's been playing pretty well. There's the defensive guy, Carsten Tada. Daniel Theis is another power forward who would obviously be in the mix. There's also the couple of the Germans over in the States, the main one being Mauro Loh, who was in the German team last summer, so he's in the mix. But obviously, I think the first thing that needs to be decided is if Nowitzki is going to play, and then also if Kamen's going to play. If Kamen also comes along, I think there's going to be a totally different system. Whereas I think that if Kamen doesn't come, and you know, and Fleming can kind of go to use some of his, you know, use his big men to do different things. I really like it. Really like the signing. I'm happy for Chris, who's been on the show, and that he gets the position, that he gets to stick around Germany. And I think he's pretty excited about this group. There's a lot of players that he can do a lot of things with. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of German team is put together for next year. They signed him until 2016, option for 2017. And the president, Ingo Weiss, was saying that they'd like to try to get him out to 2020. So obviously a lot depends on what's going to happen next year. I would imagine going into the tournament, regardless if Nowitzki comes or not, the goal is to get into that top six, top two, reach the Olympics in 2016 in Brazil directly, and then the places 3 to 6 go to the Olympic qualifying tournament. So that's the goal, I imagine, for Fleming and the guys for that. I really do like the signing. I think he's an ideal candidate, a smart guy who knows the game here. And there's been rumblings last couple of days that the DBB is considering a second director of sports, and Wolfgang Heider, the former general manager of Bamberg, has been linked to that. And where he would then, that person, that individual, if it is created, that position, that post, would then sort of be sort of responsible for the development of the youth national teams, German national teams, and trying to improve that. So Germany, the seeds have come out. The draw is on Monday, December 8th, down in Disneyland in Paris. So if you're in Disneyland for whatever reason on Monday, go check it out. But it will be on live on YouTube, so you can follow it there. I went out and kind of just put together my groupings. There's partners, which I originally wasn't aware of. There's partners. Each of the co-hosting nations were allowed to pick one team, one nation that sort of is their partner. France picked Finland, Croatia picked Slovenia, Latvia picked Estonia, and Germany picked Turkey. So those two teams will all be in the same group for sure. That leaves that Germany, for example, will definitely have either Spain or Lithuania, and they would also have definitely either Ukraine or Serbia. And also that means that France and Croatia definitely will avoid all four of those teams. Some of the other big names that are not among the, let's say, partner groups, obviously those four that I just named, Italy, Greece, probably the biggest ones. The Russians are also among that group. Bosnia, Macedonia, Poland, Georgia, Czech, Israel, Iceland, and Netherlands. Those are the remaining 24. So we'll definitely know. The top four seed, the top four seeds, if you will, are then France, Croatia, Lithuania, and Spain. The second grouping is Finland, Sweden, Ukraine, Serbia, followed by Greece, Bosnia, Latvia, Turkey, Belgium, Italy, Macedonia, Poland make up the fourth grouping. Germany's in group five in the grouping, the fifth grouping with Israel, Czech, and Georgia. And the final is the final grouping is Russia, is Iceland, Estonia, and Netherlands. So, we'll know Monday. And then I'll definitely go more into that next week's show. One of the guys I mentioned, who I think will definitely play a bigger role in next year's Eurobasket than he did in the World Cup, will be Mr. Mario Hezonja. The Croatian has really picked up his game. Has gotten more minutes, I guess, is the main point. Xavi Pascual has given him some more time, and he's definitely taking advantage of it. He turns 20 in late February. Was watching the Armani game and ended up with 13 points, season high. Is actually his previous high for the season was 6. Played a season high 22 minutes. Had a vicious block, vicious dunk, and had a pretty nasty block on a drive by Hackett. Definitely showing some of his versatility, some of his athleticism, and just the fact that the 19-year-old is getting into that rotation. Is saying something when you think about some of the guys that he's on the floor pretty much instead of, you know, I mean, he's taking time away from Abrines, you know, which is definitely saying something. People have been waiting for him to kind of persevere, get through. He's definitely doing that. Started the game against Milan. Barcelona, they pretty much you know, have first place guaranteed. But still, you know, I mean, it's one thing to actually go out there and give him the minutes. And Hezonja has definitely responded in a good manner. And I imagine he'll continue to play well. There's no real reason why he shouldn't. You know, though, you know, he's that athleticism, you know, it's growing. He's growing more. He's getting more physical. And, you know, just from a physical maturation standpoint, you know, he's still 19. He won't turn 20 until the end of February. So he's getting there physically, and you're seeing it. And so it's pretty it's nice to see that development. He also, you know, he was the interview partner for the postgame, for EuroLeague, you know, sounded like a regular veteran. I mean, the guy's won a lot of things in his youth tournament days. So I mean, nobody doubts his winner's mentality. And so now we're just starting to see him finally take that next step, start to take the next step, maybe might be the best way to say it. If he continues with this, I mean, I imagine, you know, he's you know, it just speaks of a lottery pick whenever he does decide to go to the NBA. It's definitely exciting. Go check out the live basketball TV. Check out. There's also highlights of the game. Go check him out. Definitely cool to see him playing well. So that's EuroLeague today, Wednesday, the 3rd of August, 3rd of December. Sorry. Wow, where'd that come from? We might see the first team actually officially eliminated from the EuroLeague. Bayern are playing at Milan, and if Milan can pull out the victory, they would actually officially eliminate Bayern Munich from the top 16. They would actually be the first team to fully be eliminated. There could be other teams that are eliminated Thursday and Friday, but the day of the recording, Bayern could actually become the first team to be eliminated. Bayern also, sorry to come back to Germany, but you know, it is sticking EuroLeague and it is talking prospects NBA as well. Vasily Micic went down with a collateral ligament tear in his elbow, and which just seems like much more of a baseball pitcher's injury. So he'll be out 6 weeks. It's kind of disappointing because he had really started to step up his game more and more, and was still getting the playing time despite Bo McCaleb being on the team. We're going to miss Micic for the next 6 weeks. Unless Bayern can pull out a victory tonight, Wednesday, and probably one more victory. I don't know if we're going to be seeing them in the EuroLeague next calendar year, though they would move down to the Euro Cup. So at least there will be the chance for those games to be seen as well. So let's move on. Let's move on. Have the Oceania, the U18 FIBA Oceania U18 Championship for men and women, which will then determine the final spots in the FIBA U19 World Championship, men and women next summer. The men, it's been pretty clear, pretty dominant so far. It's basically New Zealand and Australia are on a collision course, just waiting to meet up on the meet up on Saturday, December 6th, the final. So if you want to go check it out, definitely that should be the final. I can't imagine it won't be. Winning margins, the Australians are winning by 80.3 points per game, and the New Zealanders, the junior tall blacks, are winning by 83.3 points. Pretty clear dominance or just lack of talent from the other nations in the FIBA Oceania region. A couple of things just of note: some of the games are live on FIBA's YouTube channel. Both of the semifinals and all four of the semifinal men and women and the finals will all be on the channel live. The live stream for Thursday are the games on court one. So just basically only the court one games from Fiji are being shown live. But Friday, Saturday's games, the big games will all be shown. It's kind of hard to read too much into much of the stats of these games, but Australia, you know, they're forcing almost 30 turnovers. They are turning the ball over 16 times a game, which, you know, isn't very, very good, especially against the level of competition that they are facing. And they're hitting, you know, 62% from free throws. You know, it's not great. It could hurt you down the line, you know, meaning in the final against New Zealand. New Zealand have taken care of the ball better. They're just they've turned the ball over 12.7 times per game. 16.3 was what Australia did. But they're hitting 48% from 3-point range, compared to the 40% for Australia, but just 46% from the free throw line. You can imagine that it might be a tight one-off game, and if you're not able to hit your free throws, that could hurt New Zealand big time in the finals. So that's one thing to definitely watch out for. It doesn't look like anybody's going to give either of these teams much of a fight. All of this, obviously, the men's grouping, the women's side is pretty much the same. Australia gave up 8 points to American Samoa in the first game, New Zealand beat Tahiti 104-27. You know, Australia beat New Catalonia 125-22. You know, so this is obviously clearly, going to be the Aussies against New Zealand. I think it's good though that the expansion of Oceania, because it gives these other countries a chance to get some experience playing against these teams. To see, you know, okay, how far away they are, but at least it gives them a sort of a gauge. Okay, this is where we need to get to in order to be, you know, and this is a target where we can get to. So, obviously, the big game is on Saturday, hang on one second. I'll look at the time. The women's final will be, the women's final is at 5 p.m., which I believe is 5 a.m. Central European time. 5 a.m. Central European time for the women's final. 7 a.m. Central European time for the men's final. Saturday, 7 a.m. Most likely New Zealand against Australia. I guess since the last time we talked, Isaac Humphrey has been ruled out. Harry Froehling, Jack White, both sat out one of the games. Looked like they were just kind of sick. If there's ever a time for New Zealand to get them, this might be it. But we'll see. We'll see on Saturday. We'll see on Saturday. Let's get to the interview. This week, we're sticking to Oceania and talked to a good buddy of mine, Damon Cotter, who first met as he was running the Australian team at the, I believe at the Mannheim Albert Schweitzer tournament 3 years ago now. I believe is when that was, maybe 2012. And he's the new head coach at the Sydney Kings. And and he was also the assistant coach of the women's Australian women's national team, who just collected third place at the FIBA Women's World Championship. And so here's my chat with good old Damian Cotter. So enjoy this, and we'll catch you on the other side. All right, this week on the show we have Damian Cotter, the head coach with the Sydney Kings. Damian, thanks for coming on.
Pleasure to be here, David. Long way away.
Long way away, down in Australia. Summer in the city.
Beautiful weather.
starting. Go ahead. Just tell us how warm it is down there.
Yeah, it's it's interesting. Probably for our. For your Northern Hemisphere supporters, with basketball being a winter sport, in our pro league here, it's a summer sport. So apart from training in, at times, heated conditions, it's pretty good weather just about everywhere we go. So it's not bad at all. It's about 30 degrees today. And, things are good.
It could be worse. There's worse places to be coaching men's basketball.
Yeah, I think so. The two Americans that we've got, and I think most Americans on all the teams feel like they've won the lotto when it comes to getting jobs, when in terms of weather. And so it's a pretty nice country to be in during summer.
Let's actually go away from men's sports, actually men's basketball for a minute, because you actually were an assistant coach with the Australian women's national team, the Opals, at the FIBA World Championship for Women. You guys came up with
an outstanding achievement.
Yeah, you guys came up with the third place, bronze medal. And doing that without Lauren Jackson, without Liz Cambridge, you guys caught the dreaded Americans in the semifinals, which obviously I think probably the goal is to avoid the USA as long as possible. It looks like you gave them, I'll admit I didn't watch the game, but it looks like you gave them a pretty good fight. And then came back and really... gave up 4 points in the first quarter against Turkey.
We
showed that you guys are deserving of a medal.
Yeah, look, we're very proud of the girls. I thought the head coach, Brendan Joyce, did a terrific job at keeping the group together. We lost Lizzie very close to the Worlds, just a few games out at our pre-tournament that was held in France, and Lizzie ruptured her Achilles. So going into that and performing the way we did, I felt like the girls did their themselves and the country proud, and we defended really well. We got to the US closer than anybody else, and we're very encouraged about the future of the program.
Where would you place this victory or this third place then in the annals of Opal history then?
Well, I think it's significant considering, like what I just said about, a lot of people wrote us off because we're in a process of change. You know, the Opals have had a great tradition of success for a lot of years now, and then losing such players such as Lizzie and Lauren Jackson for that tournament, I think a lot of players stepped up and we defended well. I felt players accepted their role and we were extremely well led by Penny Taylor along with Laura Hodges, our captains, and we stayed together, and the bronze medal at any level is a great achievement.
And how important was it to get back onto the podium after not being there in 2010?
Yeah, so it was a big change in the roster from the 2010 group and new coach, along with the staff and the head coach Brendan Joyce, really established early strong behavioural traits he wanted from the players, and I really feel with the adversity that we dealt with so close to the tournament, not just with losing Lauren but losing Lizzie. A few games out, it galvanised the group, and we hung tough. And I think we had an exceptional tournament. Winning bronze is terrific, no matter what. But just under the circumstances, it was an outstanding achievement.
What can you learn as a coach from being and watching just sort of observing a player like Penny Taylor? What kind of things can you learn from just watching her?
Penny, I had the fortunate experience of being involved as an assistant coach in a under 20 elite team that Penny was involved with. And she's close to my neighbourhood where we grew up. I'm a little bit older than her, but nevertheless, I've known Penny for a long time. And the thing about Penny, she leaves no stone unturned. The ultimate professional, and you know she's willing to do whatever it takes for the team to win, whether it's for her to make a pass, she'll play a role, and she was an outstanding leader, I felt, as the tournament went on. You could just see that she would just hold the group together, make plays when we needed it, and you know it's always great when you get an opportunity as a coach to be around players such as Penny.
All right, so you actually went from the Opals team from the women's world championship, FIBA World Championship for women, then directly to the Sydney Kings, they were about a week or even less?
Less than a week. I kid you not. I had a 9-hour layover in Dubai and I was scouting. I spent those 9 hours in the middle of the night scouting our opposition. My assistant coach did a terrific job in preparing while I was away for 2 weeks. And the head coach, Brendan Joyce, allowed me to stay a little bit longer. And so I missed some things with the Opals as well. So there was a lot of compromises all around and a lot of people really stepped up. And we ended up getting the first win, which was terrific. But I feel like I haven't stopped. I got off the plane and jumped into this thing, and it's been a big learning curve really enjoying it. But I wish I had a little bit more time to savor that bronze medal. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe the I don't know, the thing that maybe you think was, because you know the head coaching position finally, and maybe how it's been different. I mean, we're only 10 games into the season for you. Maybe how it's been different than what you thought it would be.
Well, I had last year, I was Shane Heal's assistant with the Kings last year, and I'm really grateful to Shane that he brought me in. I think stepping into a high level when you have no experience of the league is such a big challenge. So I had a little bit of that. Working for Brendan Joyce with the Opals, who was a very successful National League coach in his own right, prior to getting the Opals position, that certainly helped me. But no matter what, how much preparation you do, and I knew this would happen, it's always a steep learning curve, and it's had its challenges, but I've also really enjoyed the learning element of it. And we've not only, new coach, but we turned over quite a large amount of the group, not for any reason, but we ended up with 7 new players. So we've got a very young team with a new coach, and we're doing okay at the moment. We're 5-5.
Yeah, 5-5. You actually won 4 of your last 6. Maybe how you think you guys are doing?
Yeah, I think we're doing okay. The thing that we've preached from day one, no matter what happens on weekends, and when we were putting this group together, it was really important for me. And we're a bit different in Australia, probably to a lot of the European listeners, where there's a lot more games. We play a lot of our games around the weekends, not too many midweek games. There are a few, but not too many. And the thing about that is you get to train a lot and practice a lot. So you really want to have a good group. And when I sat down and said, well, as a rookie coach, I want to make sure I'm enjoying my days on the training track with this group. And we've got an outstanding group of lads. And getting back to your question, we've sort of said as a group, no matter what happens, we just try and get better every Monday. And we're a better team by Friday. And we had a great result. We had a poor first half. We had a pretty tough road trip and on the weekend. And we had a poor first half on our second game and came back from a 14-point deficit to win on the road. And it's an NBL record. And, you know, I'm very proud of the guys right now.
Yeah, and that was also a pretty important victory just because, you know, Adelaide is a team that's down right now, and you definitely, you were at 4-5, and, you know, you would have been a lot closer to the bottom than you are closer to the top now. You guys have Breakers coming up, New Zealand Breakers, who obviously are, you know, one of the leaders right now in the league. Maybe talk about the you just played them in New Zealand, and
that's right,
and had a pretty high scoring game. What you guys learned from that game that you want to take and trying to get maybe let's call it revenge on the home court?
Well, we winning at home, when the league's so tight this year, there's been an influx of such good players, and every game's important, but winning at home's crucial. You know, what makes the Breakers so tough, you know, a lot of those players represented New Zealand, and they've had that fever experience at the World Championships, and so they're a well-experienced team, and they've been a stable group for many years now. And so for us to be successful, we've got to start competing better with the New Zealand and the New Zealand Breakers and the Perth Wildcats of the league. And, you know, we're looking forward to the return game. You know, we need to defend more consistently, which, you know, our second half against Adelaide yesterday was terrific, and that's what we need to do. And the good teams in this league defend well, and we've shown glimpses of doing that. We've proven that we can put on a lot of points also, but if we get caught into that type of game, I think it suits opposition more than what it suits us. And, you know, slowly but surely we're getting a greater buy-in, and players are becoming more committed defensively. And if we can start being consistent over 4 quarters, I think we can compete with anybody.
Yeah, you got the Breakers this coming week, and then the weekend, and then 2 weeks later, you get the Wildcats, both at home. Be fantastic to get those 2 victories, I assume.
Yeah, they'll be tough games, no doubt. And we have a lot of respect for those teams, but it's good for us too. You know, we're a young group and we keep improving. And, you know, we want to play better every time we play against those teams. And it's my first year in, but since the re-establishment of the Kings, they haven't beaten the Wildcats. And we'd love to do that sooner rather than later, let me tell you.
Let's go back to the Breakers actually really quick. There's the FIBA Under-19 World Championship qualifiers for FIBA Oceania going on right now, actually in Fiji, and a lot of those guys are in the Breakers. I guess it's the New Zealand Breakers Academy. I don't know how much you know. I mean, you've been in youth basketball quite a bit, and you're let's call it down there. But how much do you know about this New Zealand Breakers Academy, and how important is that? How much of a benefit maybe is that that they're basically, you know, calling it, you know, they have the whole, you know, the whole country that to sort of filter into the system to bring in guys. How much do you know about this New England Breakers Academy?
Well, the Breakers they're a class outfit as far as an organization. Their owner's terrific. They've invested a lot of time into their development program. I think it's the envy of the league. And you have a look at, for example, Ruben Tarang. He played very well against us on the weekend. He's a product of that. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, the coaching staff's involved with the development of it. They're involved with the national program. It'll be quite interesting to see how this championship goes. I'm sure they'll be good. I'm not really familiar with these younger players, but I think the Breakers do a great job with their development, and it's something that we'll be looking at the Kings, you know, as we get more established with our program, to emulate. Especially with my background, I've been involved with development for many years.
Just as your sort of general, maybe your general idea, what, or your general opinion, the format of the Oceania U19 qualifiers has changed, and now there's the big 10-nation tournament in Fiji, whereas in the past it's been basically the Aussies against the Tall Blacks, and in a 3-game set. And this seems to be a pretty strong New Zealand team, and there's a lot of big names for the Aussie team that aren't there. Let's just go worst case scenario for Australian listeners. What would it mean if Australia were not to were to actually lose? And it's a one-off game. If both teams make it through the semifinals to the final against each other, New Zealand and Australia. The last three tournaments at the U19 qualifiers, Australia's won 3-0, 3-0, 3-0. What would it mean if Australia were unable to qualify for U19s, man?
Well, I think obviously it'd be a great disappointment. I think at the under-19s, I don't think Australia's ever been defeated in the history since it started. You know, the new tournament's interesting. And that one game that you talk about, I knew when it was my time was up. I felt it was a good thing because New Zealand's getting better every year.
That's a good team, man.
And they certainly have to be respected. And like you said, we're missing quite some good players. I have a lot of confidence in the coach, Adam Capone, and his staff, Mark Radford and Tim Mellon. I think they're a great staff and they're well experienced. So, but as you say, you only have to play well on one game. Mm-hmm. And it could go either way. And it's the same for New Zealand. It's going to be a tough. It's interesting what you just said that they're in the semis. They probably should be placed to be first and second seed. It's going to be it'll be a challenge. And if Australia gets up, I think it'll be a tremendous achievement for the Aussies to beat a pretty good New Zealand team.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the Australian players that aren't there. I mean, we can kind of touch on that a little bit, but you know, there's guys like Simmons isn't there. I guess Humphreys just got hurt.
Yep.
Bolden's not there. You know, this whole thing about Thon Maker hasn't been decided. All of these guys will probably be in Crete next year if Australia make it. So, listeners of the show know that I'm into youth basketball, and I talked quite a bit I was writing about the New Zealand team, and just wanted to get your opinion on that. You mentioned,
I think just on that, Dave, I do think regardless of the result, when you start talking those names, and what's already sort of just happened recently, you know, with Exum and Dellavedova. It's exciting for our country to have so many players getting stature and recognition. And as long as that keeps happening, you know, that whatever happens with the result, you know, the game's thriving at this level in this country. And we're all very excited about the future prospects of Australian basketball.
Kind of touching on that, you mentioned that some of the some bigger names are coming in. Obviously, you have probably the biggest name in the game right now, with Josh Childress coming in. Obviously, with all of his NBA experience, also some elite level experience in Europe. But there's also guys like DeAndre Daniels, who won the NCAA title with UConn. Scotty Wilbekin, who was with Florida, made a good run there, and Jordan McRae, who was a Spurs draft pick. Maybe talk about just the level of guys coming into the league now.
Yeah, look, if you'd given the team to me that I've got now, and we're in the league last year, we'd feel pretty good about our chances. I think a lot of teams have done a tremendous job at recruiting. I think with what happened with James Ennis last year is really helped teams or players use Australia as an option to come in and play and get developed and bounce back to a higher level. Like Brock Modem's come back from Utah to play with Adelaide also. That was a great signing for them. And, you know, it's made the league very tough. And, that's why us winning in Adelaide on the weekend was really important. If we can stay around the 50-50 mark and hang together, because it's going to – I just think the league's going to get better and better as the teams get more and more organized and cohesive as the season goes on.
There's a salary cap. That's new for this for the league, right?
No, there's always been a salary cap.
There's always been a salary cap. Okay.
Yeah, and all our sports here have a salary cap.
Okay.
There's ways within the salary cap where you can sign players I won't say loopholes. I just said it, but I think by and large, you know, nobody's overspending and breaking their budget, because the last thing we need with 18 league, we're looking to expand in the next year or so. But with an 18 league, we don't want any club, disappearing.
It's a million Aussie dollar salary cap. And just looking through the statute, it says including all player payments, for example, car allowance, accommodations. That led me to a question. Just led me to a thought, and I just wanted to actually just point it to you. And just let me know what you think. Is there a beneficial advantage if you are in a place that's cheaper to live for the a lower cost of living? Like, you know, Sydney has a certain cost of living. Adelaide has a certain cost of living. Is there an actual advantage of
No doubt. Actually, our Australian football code has a living allowance for the Sydney-based teams, because I think Sydney is one of the most expensive cities in the world. So, you know, there's the town Wollongong is about an hour and a half south of Sydney. It's a cheaper place to live than in Sydney. And hence, my whole theme was recruiting Sydney people back to Sydney, because it's just easier. Because there is no doubt that it's a bit more of a challenge.
Okay, so it is.
So yeah, it's a great question, and it hasn't been too much of an issue for us, because I've bought a lot of Sydney people. Former Sydney kids back to the program.
Yeah. Okay. I saw it and I thought, you know what, that might be. You know. So. The CEO of the league, the NBL CEO, Fraser Neal, resigned a couple weeks ago. I was actually trying to get him on the show to talk about the league, but in the meantime, he actually resigned. This is not a laughing matter necessarily, but just thought it was kind of curious. Maybe what kind of impact do you sense that might have, and what's sort of the feeling around the league about having the boss step down, if you will?
Well, it's never good. I think Fraser, to me, provided great leadership in the short time he was here. It was 13 months. At the helm, he's going to finish at the end of this calendar year. But last week, all the directors met, and from what I've garnished, the bits and pieces that I've been able to pick out of people is that they're very positive about expansion next year, and the league will keep moving forward. You know, the game's very, very popular here, whether it's the NBA. It's I think outside, there's more NBA TV sold per capita than anywhere in Australia. And at the grassroots level, I think it's the second most participant sport. So the league's moving on. It's starting to get good crowds again. And we're playing in front of good crowds and big arenas. And there's really positive talk of expansion in Brisbane and maybe Melbourne and a few other regional places. So the vibe's pretty good. Disappointment to lose Fraser, but you know, the game survived a lot over recent times at this level, and it, I don't see why anything will change.
You were witness of an ugly incident, and it made headlines just because he's a big name, with Josh Childress sort of giving the elbow. I can't remember who it was against.
Jesse Wagstaff.
Yeah.
I was there.
I know, obviously.
I was right there. I had the best seat in the house.
There was the back pick along the baseline that happened immediately before it. I think you really need to go and watch the entire game and see their interaction between each other in general over the course of the game, to see if it was more than, you know, if that was just basically the last straw. So maybe first of all, and maybe a two-prong answer, sort of, or first of all, you know, your thoughts about that, and then, you know, I imagine you're going to say, you know, it's not in his character, you know, maybe what kind of happened there. And then, you know, the league handed down the one game suspension. You know, it seems to me that it could have been higher, but, you know, do you think that that's an okay suspension for him in general? Just maybe talk about that incident, just because it did garner some headlines around the world.
Yeah, no doubt. And it was quite funny. I was hearing from people I haven't heard from quite some time internationally because of all the press it got. Look, you know, Josh had a brain snap, and I felt the way he conducted himself after that was really classy. As far as the one-game suspension, we had a similar incident last year in the finals. With two players, it was a one-game suspension, so it was consistent to that. You know, for me, I was happy it was one game. You know, of course, for Josh, you know, Josh puts a lot of pressure on himself. A lot of people didn't understand that he hadn't played for that long. Going into Perth, you know, it's a very unique environment by our standards. You know, the supporters are unbelievably fanatical for their team. It's an aggressive environment, and they've had a culture of success for a lot of years now. So the, you know, when it's in that environment, they're quite physical. And it wasn't, you know, I felt that they outplayed us, not just in that incident, but it just all around it for the whole duration of the game. And Josh had his brain snap. We've moved on. You know, we had disappointment a week after without him. We gave up an 18-point lead to lose. And since that point, I felt like the groups just got better and better. And you know, the one thing I'll say about Josh Childress, you know, I'm a first-year coach. Josh is a pleasure to coach. He lets me coach him. And, you know, yesterday his will to win really pushed us over the line. I thought it was a tremendous effort. So We're really lucky to have him, and we're already trying to convince him in coming back next year, and he seems to be enjoying his basketball, and that's what he wanted to enjoy. So after that little incident, and we'll call it a little one, we've really moved on from it.
All right, you've moved on. Let's move on. And just for those who might not know, you've mentioned it a couple times. You guys came back from 14 points down at halftime to beat Adelaide. I mentioned earlier that I was doing that I wrote something about New Zealand. And in that there was actually talk. This is from the New Zealand side, that there was talk from the Breaker side, and I'll kind of just read this off just so they phrase it correctly. A change in regulation that restricts games able to be played by NCAA eligible athletes. Now, this is talking about the Australian NBL, and I kind of got back and forth with you really quick on Twitter messages. They were talking about Ty Winyard, who might want to go to college. A couple of those New Zealand kids, the Breakers kids, probably want to go to college. Can you explain this this rule to me?
Yeah, look, it's really difficult when it comes to the NCAA. They're very consistent at changing the rules and the process. When I was coaching at Knox Raiders in the second-tier league, the Southeast Australian Basketball League, the players weren't allowed to play at that level because you're playing with players that were getting paid some money. Then they relaxed the rule and allowed them to play. Yeah, that's right. And you sign a document, an amateur document, and you're fine. But as I understand now, while you're in high school, you can play at that level. But once you finish high school, if you do play at that level, you'll be deemed a professional. So you're not allowed to play. So it's a little bit convoluted. What we're telling our kids, both male and female, it's just safer not to play because you just don't want to lose your eligibility, if that's what you want to do as far as go and play college basketball.
So is the the recognition of there's no form that the NBL can sign with a player who's already finished high school?
As I understand it, I know our federation has gone and met with the NCAA on numerous occasions to try and get some clarity. Because what we want, and it's not just the top tier level, what we want is we want our best kids playing, you know, at our second and third tier, you know, for their clubs, because it's good for the game. And it's very, very, the NCAA is difficult to deal with as far as, you know, the bureaucratic nature of how they are. I understand they need to make rules and protect the amateurism of the NCAA. But it's, over the years, I've watched it change a lot. And I've always, when I was involved with the New South Wales Institute of Sport prior to the Kings, I spent a lot of time talking to people to make sure I gave players the right advice. Mm-hmm. And it's always, it's frustrating because I just think kids not playing, they need to play so they get opportunities. but they can't play because they'll lose eligibility. So it's a real catch-22, and I hope common sense prevails and these kids get an opportunity to get out and play for their club and then hopefully get a good scholarship at a good institution in the States.
Is it a long-term goal for the NBL and is this maybe in coordination with Basketball Australia to keep some of these kids even here? I mean, in Australia, not even, you know, for them, not even to say, let's go over to get a college education. I mean,
it's a real interesting subject because it polarizes people. Like, some people think it's the way to go get a free education / this is the only way for college for you to develop as basketball. And then on the other side of it, you've got some people that think staying in the country and working and playing professionally is the best way. And that's been successful as well. My personal feelings on it is it's completely up to the individual to make the decision. I think it's up to the coaches in Australia to best educate that individual on what the right decision is for them, because it, you look at a kid like Della Vadova, it's been extremely successful for him. And being involved with him as a coach with the junior national program, you know, and knowing and watching his work ethic, and the same with Cam Bairstow, you can't refute the fact that they've been successful in the college system. And then you've got people like Joe Ingles, who decided to stay, Brad Nooley decided to stay, and they've had really successful professional careers also.
I know you're not, you haven't been involved in the youth basketball leagues, the teams, for Australia now for a couple of years. But is there somebody out there, let's call it 20 and under, Australian, that's in Australia that, maybe people should watch out for in the next, let's say 2-3 years?
I know you've sort of publicized, I think Jonah Bolden, I think the kid Isaac Humphreys has got a chance to be pretty good. There's quite a few kids coming through. It's funny, like when you move out of that realm of development, it moves on without you pretty quick. And, but they're probably the names that I can give you off the top of my head. I feel very positive about our game going forward. And, we've got a history of immigrants, and they've really contributed to our game. You know, we had a lot of Balkans, certainly led by Bogut, influence our game. And now we've got a huge Sudanese community that have immigrated to Australia. I think that's going to start to have an impact on our national teams also as time goes on. So I think in 10, 15 years time, people are going to see a very different looking Australian team.
I think people kind of know about the Balkan sort of connection. Do you know much of the history about the connection with the Sudanese?
Well, we have an immigration policy, and obviously, the turmoil in South Sudan, and there's pockets of Sudanese communities all over Australia now, and they love basketball. And I have a development player in my program, and they're starting to. Matiang Miao is playing for Perth Wildcats. I have a player named Madul Chol in development, and I noticed that yesterday Adelaide had a player, Tim. And it's just, you can just see the influence is starting to creep in, and I think it's quite exciting. There's a kid, Dengak, that I think is going to get heavily recruited. I think he's a good kid. I spent a small amount of time with him. And they're gym rats. The kids, are quite excited, and they're built for our game. So they're long and athletic, and as time goes on, I feel like things will be really it's going to be interesting to see the influence as the future unfolds.
I could talk to you for ages. We don't have let's try to finish off. Let's bring it back to you guys. Top four make it to the playoffs. Right now, you're in fifth, right behind United at 5-5. They're 6-5. I guess the question will be, what do you guys need to do to get to the playoffs?
Well, I mentioned earlier about just being more consistent defensively. We have enough talent to win games, but we don't have enough talent just to rely on it. And that's Josh included. So we have to be a little bit more tougher, a little bit more physical. We've got to rebound a little bit better. We've proven that we can score, but you know, you have a look at the weekend when we lost to New Zealand. We shot 96 points and still lost, and that's almost unheard of, and that just says a lack of effort defensively. And we were headed down the same route with Adelaide yesterday, but the guys turned it around in the second half, and we kept teams to low, we kept Adelaide to low third and fourth quarter scores. If we do that, we've got a really good chance of making the finals. And I think the guys are starting to understand we have to play a certain way to be successful.
Damien Cotter, head coach of the Sydney Kings. Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming on the show. I love chatting with you all the time anyhow, and so this was actually time for people to get some great information about the Australian NBL, some women's Opals hoops talk, and some youth basketball as well. Damien, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Good luck this weekend. The big game at home against the Breakers, the leaders in the standings right now, so keep up the good work.
Thank you, David, and a pleasure to be on, and never hesitate to call me. I really enjoyed it. Thanks.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so Damien Cotter, good guy, and definitely wishing the best for him. Hopefully able to get the Kings into the playoffs. Interesting to see if they were to be the fourth seed. They will then play, probably the way it looks like right now, either the Breakers or the Wildcats in the first round. But obviously there's still plenty of basketball to be played before we even get to the playoffs. I wanted to get to talk to him, just because, you know, the basketball in Australia is exciting to me. The one thing I really wish is that the live basketball TV actually showed the games on demand. They show the games live, but they for some reason they just can't seem to just to go by me without knowing that they're on. Not on live basketball TV all the time, so I don't know all the games that are coming up. You know, definitely watch the EuroLeague games. But the other stuff, you know, that's Thursday, Friday night. But the other stuff, you know, Saturday in the morning, Sunday in the morning, you know, it's not a lot of times, that I realize that the games are on, and they're pretty good games, pretty exciting games. You know, there's a lot of guys that come over. You know, we were talking about some of the good guys, you know, Daniels and obviously Childress and Wilbeka and stuff, and actually some of those guys have come over to Europe. Karan Johnson, for one, as was one of the main guys for over there last year, played for New Zealand, and has come over here, is playing in Germany, is playing for Ludwigsburg. So there's it's an exciting league, and I really wish that the games would also be shown on demand on live basketball TV, but they only show the highlights. You got to get to an NBL specific package, and there's just too much other basketball to watch, so I just want to get that package. But if you have a chance, you know, go watch it. It's exciting ball. It's pretty good level, and if nothing else, just to listen to the commentators speak that wonderful down under accent, it's always enjoyable as well. So I guess that's the show for the week. Obviously, the big news this week will be the first couple teams probably be eliminated from EuroLeague. Looking, you know, a handful of teams have already clinched their spots in the top 16. Saturday, obviously, is the big game in the under 19 qualifiers for FIBA Oceania. There's obviously, you know, NBA just going on as usual, and college basketball. I'm not sure exactly what's going on, what some of the top games are, but you know, you're looking at some of the big teams, and they're all, you know, they're showing that they're pretty darn good. Did have a chance actually, just going back, did have a chance to see that Wisconsin Georgetown game, and man, those are two good teams, and they'll definitely be playing pretty deep into March, I can imagine. So you know, anytime to watch college basketball, anytime you watch college basketball, you'll be watching some good hoops. There's a lot of exciting teams down in the NCAAs, and so lots of basketball as always to watch, and we will talk about more of it next week. Until then, I will let you go, and the song for the week is called "Nobody Here But Us," Charles Dickens, by Uncle Bibby. So talk to you next week.
This is Patrick Baumann, Secretary General of FIBA, and you're listening to Taking the Charge. Enjoy.